November 7th, 2013. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Pope Runyon, and tonight we present a discussion on the 25th path of the Hermetic Kabbalistic Tree of Life. This path goes up the middle pillar from Yesod to Tifereth and has the tarot trump temperance attributed to it. Dr. Rigardi considers it related to the Holy Guardian Angel as your guiding spirit on the path. The astrological reference is Sagittarius and relates to an arrow shot directly upwards. The Hebrew letter is Svek, and the traditional reference is the tentative intelligence. Again, our texts for tonight will be Gareth Knight's Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism and John Michael Greer's Paths of Wisdom. So, if you want to keep going up the tree with us, tune in, close your eyes, and we'll take a shot at the sun. Now, this is probably one of the most important paths on the tree, and those of you who are listening who have a Tree of Life diagram in front of you, you'll be able to follow this a little bit better. But this path is right straight up on the middle pillar, right under Tiphereth, and it goes from Yesod, the sphere of the moon, and the sphere of memory, and the sphere of the emotions, the foundation, right at the entrance to the astral plane, or the zero dimension. And then from Yesod to Tiphereth, which represents the sun and beauty and transformation and the central God presence of the solar system, this path passes through what is referred to as the veil of the sanctuary. Now, in the structure of the Tree of Life, we have two of these divisions, which you cross in your ascent. And this one, the veil of the sanctuary, is between the three lower spheres. That's Malkuth, Yesod, Hod, and Netzach, that are grouped down below this veil of the sanctuary. And then there's the veil. And then above that, we have Tiphereth, which is the sphere, as I said, of the sun and of transformation, and the sphere of sacrifice and redemption, the sphere where you would place Jesus, Osiris, and Baal, and his brother Moat. And I'll explain that in a sense that Baal is a vegetation spirit. This is the original Canaanite pantheon. Baal is the vegetation spirit that grows and dies every year, is resurrected. And his brother Moat, the original Grim Reaper, is actually a solar, very much a solar entity. One might call him a solar demon, if you want to call him that. And because he's at the height of his power in the summertime when everything dries up. And so he and he's Baal's brother. And so the two of them, in the Canaanite mythology, the two of them reside in Tiphereth. And otherwise, as I said, we would have in Egyptian mythology, we would want to put Osiris there, and I'm sure we're all familiar with the legend of Osiris being killed by Typhon and being dismembered, and then being brought back to life by his sister and wife Isis, and who goes around and about collecting his body parts and whatever, and so you can put just about any, especially any solar dying and rising god. If you're a Mithraite, you would certainly put Mithra in Tiphereth. And obviously, this is going to be a transformation sphere, and that veil of the sanctuary is placed between Tiphereth and Yesod and Hod and Netzach. So that's the structure of it. But to make it a little more obvious as to how the special nature of this path up the middle pillar, from Hod over on the left side of the tree, the pillar of severity, Hod, the intellectual sphere, the sphere of Mercury, the path that leads from there diagonally to Tiphereth and also goes through the veil, that is the path of the devil. And over on the other side of the tree, from Netzach, the sphere of nature and the sphere of the goddess, this is over there on the pillar of beauty and pillar of mercy, that path leading to Tiphereth diagonally and through the veil is attributed to death. So we have two rather sinister, rather challenging, sinister paths leading from either Hod or Netzach. And then in the middle, we have this path, the 25th path, which, of course, is attributed to the tarot card Temperance. This is the middle in the balanced way. Now, these other two paths, devil and death, are referred to as the guardians. They're the two guardians that you're supposed to get through to get to Tiphereth. But some people, including John Michael Greer, recommend that you do the 25th path, Temperance, first, and before you try the other two. No, I'm not so sure that's good. I think, you know, you might want to, well, you might want to try one of the other two paths and then settle on Temperance as your best way to get there. It's up to you how you want to do it. Now, I'm going to read you the section in Regardis Garden of Pomegranates. Let me say this about Garden of Pomegranates. It's very short and very concise. In fact, it's so nice and short and concise that we use it as an in-temple reference book when we have candidates doing their Holy Guardian Angel retreat, which is a three-day intensive that requires 22 rituals over a three-day period. And Garden of Pomegranates is one of the books that will permit them to take in there because it is short and it is detailed. So here, reading from Regardis Garden of Pomegranates. And he says, path number 25, joining Tiphereth to Yesod. Numerical value is 60. This letter, Samek, means the prop. The path is attributed to the zodiacal sign of Sagittarius, the arrow, and is called the tentative intelligence. Sagittarius is essentially a hunting sign, and Diana, as the celestial archer and the goddess of the chase, finds her place in this category. Apollo and Artemis, as hunters, with the bow and the arrow, are also included. The symbol of Sagittarius is the creative centaur, the half-man and the half-beast, who is traditionally connected with archery. Ham, the horse, also, is a correspondence of Samek. And the plant appropriate is the rush used in making arrows. A perfume is lingam aloes, and green is the color. And the rainbow is also a correspondence of Samek. And in this connection, the god Ares is attributed. A tarot attribution is Temperance, showing an angel crowned with a golden sigil of the sun, clothed in a beautiful white robe, and on his breast are written the letters of the Tetragrammaton over a white square, wherein is a gold triangle. And he pours a blue liquid from a gilt chalice into another. The path leads from Yasod to Tiphereth, the sphere of the sun. The angel of the tarot would typify the holy guardian angel to whom man aspires. Now, let me mention here that the holy guardian angel experience is attributed to Malkuth, and the operational, it includes all the 22 spheres of the tree, is all done in Malkuth. But Brigardi, I think, is absolutely right that this, your holy guardian angel, should be your guide. I'm digressing now from Brigardi, but your holy guardian angel really should be your guide up this middle path. And one of the main reasons for that is you actually have three guardian angels. You have the angel, this is according to Hermes and according to Agrippa, you have three of them. You have the angel of your ascendant, you have the planetary angel who rules the sign, and then you have the holy guardian angel that is with you through all your incarnations and is not influenced by your particular natal chart. He is your angel that stays with you through your incarnations. So this is the one that mediates is the one between your ascendant, your planetary angel, whatever. So he really should, your holy guardian angel really should guide you up this path. Then we'll go back to Gregory. Okay. The keynote of the astrological sign, the arrow pointing heavenwards, is aspiration. And the sigil of the sun and the gilt triangle over the heart of the angel all point to the object of aspiration, representing Asar Unnefer, man made perfect. Hardly any can be entertained as to the correctness of these tarot allocations. Its stone is jacinth, which in reality refers to the beautiful boy Hyacinth, who was killed accidentally by Apollo with a quoit, and that's, of course, a crossbow dart. I don't think Apollo had a crossbow, so I guess it was a quoit without a firearm. Well, anyway, that's Regardi's reference. Let me say, while we're on the subject of the card, the temperance card, the one we're most familiar with, of course, is in the white deck, and we have the angel who is essentially Raphael, if you take the Golden Dawn correspondences, because the Golden Dawn puts Raphael in Hoth. I mean, as you were, Raphael in Tiphereth, and Mikael in Hoth. Now, Parthenius and Agrippa never could agree on this. They kind of vacillated back and forth between putting Raphael in Tiphereth and Mikael in Hod and Hod and Mikael in Tiphereth and Raphael in Hod. I know Bill Gray did that. Bill Gray wanted to put Mikael in Tiphereth. You know, one of the reasons why some people like to put Mikael in Tiphereth is that Christians, very devout Christians, they like to put Mikael in Tiphereth because they want a two-fisted Jesus, and Mikael is tough, and so they prefer Mikael in Tiphereth. But actually, if you know, Raphael is a healing, the teaching angel, the healing angel, the nurturing, you know, the angel that wants to help you and not judgmental. He's what a Tiphereth angel should be. At least I think so, anyway. And so does the Golden Dawn. So we'll keep Raphael in Tiphereth. Now, thing before we get off away from this tarot card, Crowley, if you notice, in his both tarot deck, he has a version of this that he calls art. By that he means alchemical art. And he has this androgynous figure, kind of half one, half dark and half light, whatever, that is putting a brand of fire down into this cauldron and then pouring liquid in it with the other hand. And then there's a white lion there and there's a red eagle. And then we have around it, in an arch around the figure, we have the vitriol formula. Visit the interior of the earth, find the stone of the wise, and be transformed. So you have this particular card. Now, I want to point something out that a lot of people don't know, is that this card, of course, was designed by Crowley and executed by Freda Harris, but I was surprised when we got the OTO rituals in Crowley's handwriting from Gerald York years and years ago. He sent them all to us before Francis King published all of them, many years before then. And I was looking through Crowley's rituals, and here is a sketch of this version of the Temperance card. Then years later, I was going through Golden Dawn papers and found the same sketch, and it was done by Mathers. So the original sketch for the original design for Crowley's version of the Temperance card was originally from the Golden Dawn, and it was originally done by Mathers. And it was, as I say, alchemical. And now, the idea here, if we're going to talk about alchemy, the idea here is to have a transformation process resulting in this path, and a balanced transformation process. You notice that in the tarot card, the weight version, you have the angel who has 1 foot on the earth and 1 foot in the water, and then he's pouring one goblet, which looks like water, into the other goblet. And you might say that he's transforming water into wine or something like that. But the key point is that we have earth and water here. And, you know, as you know, Saturn, which is the path, the 32nd path right below this path, leading up to, is attributed to earth and to Saturn. And this path, of course, is attributed to Sagittarius. So what we're doing with this alchemical idea is balancing these elements in, of course, the personality, because as we all know, I know a lot of us don't like to think about this, but the main reason why we do this work on the Tree of Life and why we study this aspect of the Kabbalah is to transform and to inspire and enlighten and acquire knowledge for ourselves, for our own personal development. This is the most important aspect of this. It isn't the master role of this so that you can cure the warts on Aunt Fanny's nose. That's not what we're doing. We're trying to improve ourselves, and we're using this process, a deep inner process here, to do that. And one of the things that I think John Michael Greer points out, and frankly, tell you the truth, in this particular instance, I prefer John Michael Greer's interpretation of this path to Basil Wilby's Gareth Knight's. I think Gareth Knight gets off on St. John of the Cross, and he just goes on and on and on. But John Michael Greer comes to the point on this. He says that you really can't get through this veil going up to Tiphereth until you face up to the fact that you can't blame all of your misfortunes and your lack of success and all the rest of the things that you're not satisfied with. You can't blame them on other people. You got to just give that up. And this, you give that up, and then you can get through this veil and you can get on into Tiphereth. Because, of course, Tiphereth is the sphere of sacrifice, the sphere of at-one-ment. And I think John Michael Greer is very right about that. Whereas the other spheres over there, the other paths, the devil and death, have a somewhat different approach to this idea. This is the middle pillar here, the 25th path. Is pretty, although it's not easy. It's certainly not easy. Is really the better way to go. Now, business with the bow, a centaur. A centaur is half man and half beast. And Charon, the centaur in legend, actually sacrificed his own life to make Prometheus immortal. So this is a very noble half beast and half man. And the idea of the bow comes from actually a combination of concepts. Katesh and the Hebrew word katesh, which means bow, and also the fact that these the two spears, well three spears actually, Hod, Netzach, and Yesod down there actually form a kind of a bow. If you look at the tree, it really does. It really looks this way. You take a look at the tree, and you can see these three spheres, and then Tiphereth up there, and then you look at the 25th path, and it's like an arrow. It really is. It forms a perfect arrow, and you shoot it right up into Tiphereth. And this is why it's referred to as the bow. And while we're talking about that, let's just mention something else, too, that confuses people. The order in which you ascend the tree is different in different interpretations, and the order actually, these paths are ordered the way John Michael Greer has it. He has them ordered this way. I'm like those of you who are looking at a tree of life, you can kind of get this idea. The first path, of course, is 32 Tau. And the second path has got to be 31 Shin. That's over to Hod. And then Quaff 29, that's the fourth. Let's see, the third. Where do you put the third? Oh, dear. One, two, four. Oh, my gosh. The third ought to be, oh, yeah, the third is Rash 30. They're leading over from the sun. It's called the sun. The path's called the sun. It leads from Yesod to Hod. That's three. And then four, of course, is Quaff, 29, leading from Malkuth to Netzach. And then five is Zadi the star, leading from Yesod to Netzach. And then six is Pech, 27, that's the tower, bridging across, you know, that's one of the bridges across from Hod to Netzach. So that's six. Seven is 25. And this is where the order starts, doesn't match. 25 is considered to be first, seven, and then Ayin, the devil, is eight, and then Nun, 24, is nine. Now, I don't completely agree with this, because I think you really ought to perhaps try, you ought to try to go through the devil and go through death, perhaps see, have the experience, and then do it right and go up the middle. That's the way I would do it, but, that's just... it's more or less the standard manner, but however, the numbers are different in that respect. Now, I know that's confusing if you're not looking at a diagram of the tree, but if you are, then it makes some kind of sense. Now, one of the things that we want to bring out here is. I'm going to read you a little bit here what he has, and here's it. It is exactly this inner passivity that is the veil, and such habit can be comforting. It is nice to be able to blame all one's troubles on someone else, but it stands squarely in the way of the work of redemption, and for that matter, of any real progress in magic. Nor is it enough to do some currently fashionable schools of thought that suggest and decide that you create your own reality. He says you don't. That is precisely the problem. The task you face as a magician is that of learning to do so. Now, this is a very, very profound sentence that John's come up with here. And the reason being this, we construct a magical universe. We actually do. We do it on traditional lines, though. And this is something that I got asked in a class just the other day. Somebody said, well, why can't we do it? Why can't we create our reality, our magical reality, any way we want to? Yeah, well, if you do that, then you're going to create it, and you're going to create it in such a way that it's going to get around your faults, and you're not going to be able to discover them. Because if you create it the way you want to, you need to create it on a traditional level because tradition will guide you through. Tradition, you create your reality, you program, you use astrology and magic and Kabbalah and all this as software, but make sure that it ties in with tradition. And that way, then, you really can advance. And this brings up to me, I remember this wonderful movie, which I recommend to everybody. It's just wonderful. The movie's called Mystery Men. And I think we've played around with this on the internet several times and whatever. But in Mystery Men, it's about a group. It's a comedy, a very profound comedy about a group of second-rate superheroes. These are people who created their own superhero identities, and they're really not quite ready for prime time in the superhero category, but they have their own costumes and their whatever, and they really want to be superheroes. And they're just not quite succeeding, so they decide to go out and get themselves a guru. And they get a guru to get them into shape so they can really realize their powers and all this. So they go they get Wes Studi, who is, that very, very good American Indian actor. In fact, he looks like the face of the Buffalo Nickel. They bring in Wes Studi, and he is a character who calls himself the Sphinx. And Wes Studi has a series of maxims that he comes up with that really are very, very, very apropos. And one of them that applies to this sentence that John Michael Greer came up with is where the Sphinx says, in order to learn my teachings, I must first teach you how to learn. I'll repeat that. In order to learn my teachings, I must first teach you how to learn. There is a world of wisdom in that statement. And of course, he has some others. While we're on the subject of the Sphinx, we might as well do the rest of them. He who doubts his powers only lends powers to his doubts. And then, there's the one I like. He who questions the training only trains himself to ask questions. So, in this case, you need to learn how to learn. And the way you learn is to realize that you are responsible for your universe, and you're responsible for your own faults and for your own failures. Nobody else is. You are. And this is the first step. And then you learn the system, the traditional building blocks of your system. And the traditional building blocks, of course, of magic are astrology and Kabbalah and the symbols of alchemy. And we learn these just as if we were going to school and learning a grammar. Now, another thing that is applied to this path is the legend of Jacob's ladder. And the ladder goes straight on up. Jacob's ladder figures in the Mithraic tradition. It figures in our Crater of Apoa, which is very much influenced by the Mithraic tradition. And let's talk a little bit about Jacob's ladder. Jacob envisioned his ladder and going up to heaven, and he called the place where he had this vision, Beth-El, which means the house of El. Now, El is a name for God. And in Phoenician mythology, El is the supreme God. He and Asherah, his wife Asherah of the sea, they rule the known, the known universe. And so El is the over-God. And El was called the compassionate, unlike Yahweh, who was called jealous and vengeful and all that. El was called El the compassionate. He ruled over all and was not terribly judgmental. He was a compassionate over God, which is quite an improvement over Yahweh's attitude. And El was probably the god of Solomon and certainly the god of Hiram of Tyre. And when they built the Solomon's Temple, they didn't build it for Yahweh, they built it for El. That's pretty obvious. And El is attributed, by the way, to, he's the holy name of Jupiter, which is very much related to this whole process. And so, let's see here. So the image of Sagittarius the archer is a centaur. Yeah, I'm trying to find this reference to Jupiter here. And Hesed has its holy name. Now, if we do this path the way we do it, and in the OTA, we would use the boat. Because, as you probably recall, we use Kusar's boat as a vehicle for all the paths above Hod, Yesod, and Netzach. And the reason for that is that we don't want to have to walk over ground that we've already done. And so we developed this boat, flying boat. It has wings. It's an Ibis boat, actually. And you can see it in our path working video. We don't do any boat workings because those are the lower three workings we do. But we have the boat. We show the boat at the end of the path workings on the altar. Now you can see that the boat has a tail. It's like a bird with its wings folded along the sides. It has places for candles on either side. We put the candles the color of the sphere we're going to. And it has a compass in the middle. It has a cockpit. It has a rudder. And it has a beak like an ibis. And right down the middle on the port side, it's all black. And on the starboard side, it's all white. And then the wings are folded on the side. Well, now, when we get in and in the temple, we all, we get around the altar facing the soul door. And our soul door is, and most of you have seen it in our videos, it's an Egyptian-style arch and a floor-to-ceiling magic mirror, dark magic mirror. So you can place the symbol of the planet that you're going to, the sphere, and then we all take our spirit bodies and put them on the boat, on the top of the altar, the boat spreads its wings, and we fly to the sphere that we're going to, or we fly over the paths and land and then take the path to the sphere. Now, in the case of the 25, path 25, leading from Yesod to Tiphereth. Actually, this is one of the paths that we do entirely with the boat, as far as the path is concerned. Now, something I want to point out that confuses a lot of people. When you do a path working, you're not just doing the path. You're doing the path to the sphere, and then you're doing the sphere. That takes you to the sphere, and you do the sphere. This confusion has arisen as a result of the Golden Dawn overemphasizing the paths. And they considered the paths to be active, well, the active principles, and the spheres were passive. They put the paths all in the Asimuthi scale, and they put the the top of the scale, and then they put the colors for the spheres in the Briatic scale, which is the archangelic dimension right below. So the idea here was, it's called the Queen Scale, by the way, and the idea here was that the paths are attributed to the tarot cards, and or at least the trumps, and there the paths are all important, and then they almost forgot about the spheres. And this is kind of sad. Well, it results, it's a result of too much, I think, dependence on Elvis Levy, who believed that the tarot preceded the Kabbalah and it was much more important. And so this path, this analog to the paths, became the most important thing. But you should never forget that your path is leading you to the sphere. And the path relates to the sphere it's leading you to. But the sphere itself is the whole realm of the principle that you're trying to achieve. You're trying to accomplish, and so this is something that a lot of people don't understand. You do a path working, sure, you go do all the various things on the path and the attention points and what have you, but then get into the sphere and learn what the sphere can teach you. This is what you're really supposed to do. So in our case, we do the 25th path. It's the one we've been talking about. We do this all in the boat, all flying. We fly over the whole thing. And, of course, there's a storm, and we have quite a bit of symbolism that occurs while we're in the boat, in the air, you know, and flying over the path. And so then we land in Tiphereth, and then our concept of the way we do Tiphereth is we have a step pyramid. A great big pyramid with a crystal on top of it, which catches the sunlight. Now, this pyramid, I have to confess, back in '88, I went down to Mexico City and went out to Teotihuacan and climbed the tower, the pyramid of the sun. Got up to the top, and this was the Day of the Dead, and the top of that pyramid is very, very, by the way, it's very hard to climb that pyramid because the steps are all way too high and too narrow. And they're designed that way to exhaust the poor guy that's going to climb up there to get sacrificed. They want to exhaust him. So by the time he gets to the, you know, he's so exhausted that he's not going to fight back, and he's about half dead anyway. And so when you get to the top, you're kind of winded. But up at the top, they have about a 50-foot square truncated flat area, and there was about 40 people up there. But over in the corner was a huddle of UNAM students, and that's University of Mexico, and they were all kind of had their backs to us. They were over in the corner of the top of the pyramid, and they didn't want anybody to watch them. They were releasing monarch butterflies from mason jars. And I turned around to Dr. Applegate, who was my host, and I said, Shelley, I said, paganism is alive and well in Mexico. Well, that experience has something to do with my particular conception of how we operate the Tiphereth sphere. So we have this big pyramid, and it has the same kind of steps up, leading up the top. And there's this big crystal up in the top, which catches the rays of the sun. So we go on in, instead of climbing all the way up, we find a door and get inside the pyramid. And inside it's, you know, a big corbelled interior. And there's Baal right under where the crystal light comes down in a column. And he's sitting up in his throne, and Moat, his brother, the god of death, is right at his left shoulder. And Moat is not too sinister, and he's kind of sad looking, and he's sympathetic. And Vol is his very masculine, very virile self. And Vol has this of the solstices, and he catches the light from the sun in this goblet, this rainbow light, and then he comes down, and we dance around him, and he shares this goblet of light with us. We fill ourselves with light, and we dance around, Deusil, around and around. And then, of course, finally, when we're exhausted, Moat comes down and tells us it's time to rest. And then he takes us by a spiral staircase up to the top of the pyramid and from the inside. And we look down from the top of the pyramid and see these people coming up and climbing this very difficult, very steep bunch of steps. And they're coming up, and they're carrying all of their possessions on their backs. That's like, you know, it's tinkling and banging like a junk wagon. They're carrying all this stuff on their backs, all their prized possessions. And as they come up, they get more and more tired, and they start dropping things off, throwing, you know, abandoning the possessions they have. And they finally get to the top, and well, out. That's when, of course, you find out that one of the ones you've been looking at is yourself. I'm not going to go too far, much further into that, because this, you know, that's a mystery kind of a thing. But this is the way we personally handle this path, and we have some other symbolism, of course, that occurs on the way here. That path, that work I just described, however, is not in the Path Working DVD that is for associate members. That's the first three plus the era path working, and so the path the spheres beyond the veil and sanctuary are really that's just basically inner order work. This particular path leading up to Tiphereth, path 25, is, as you can imagine, very important. And it's a path that you should experiment with the other two paths first. And then when you've learned those lessons, then take the path up the middle and complete your Tiphereth experience. That's my personal way of looking at it. And as far as the solar aspect of the Kabbalah, I think we're going to be getting into that next week. The importance of Tiphereth, the solar aspect of the Kabbalah. Next week we're going to have Brother Rob Sullivan on talking about his magnum opus, The Royal Arch of Enoch, this 600-page book he's written describing the classical pagan solarism behind the higher degrees of masonry, which kind of warms the cockles of my heart because, frankly, those of us who are in the Hermetic tradition, we're very much aware of this, but a lot of people don't know this, that solarism is essentially, it's north temperate zone. You get this north temperate zone solarism, and it's European and Central Asian and European, and our mythologies are all solar, and the Egyptians. Their mythology was solar, but conversely, most of the mythology, the Hebrew mythology, Arab mythology, and on down into some of the areas in India, and all that, they were not that solar, and the reason is that the sun was considered to be their enemy. the sun, they, you know, they well, when it's 120 degrees in the shade, you don't like the sun very much. But if you're in a temperate zone, the sun is the importance of the sun is obvious. When did the if the Kabbalah is basically Hebrew, why do we have this breath right in the center, and why is it so important? Well, the answer to that is just like why it's important in masonry. The answer to that is because the Kabbalah is, as we have it, the Kabbalah is essentially Pythagorean. It's got a lot. It had a lot of Greco-Egyptian classical pagan roots to it, and seen through couched in biblical terminology, but it is very, very Pythagorean, and that of course is a solar analog, and so Tiphereth, remember Giordano Bruno, remember they didn't burn him at the stake because he supported Copernicus. That Copernicus was actually caused a Hermetic revival. The Hermetic magicians loved Copernicus. Didn't hurt the astrology at all. It didn't, because astrology is geocentric anyway. But it meant that we were revolving around the sun. The sun was revolving around us, and that confirmed the Hermetic proposition that the sun is the representative of God. And Bruno said, not only is Copernicus right, but the sun is God. And they burned him at the stake at that point. The solar mythos is very definitely expressed in the Book of Enoch, which is one of the points that Rob Sullivan's making. And it is very, very much influenced Christianity. Christianity became a solar religion. This is why Jesus really is, if you want to put Jesus somewhere in the Kabbalah, you put him at Tiphereth. This is where he's got to be. And so the Tiphereth sphere is the sphere of transformation. It's the sphere of atonement, which means atonement, and it is the sphere of beauty and celestial power, and especially solar transformation and the entire solar mythos. So next week we're going to have Brother Rob Sullivan talking about his book, The Royal Arch of Enoch, which I very, very much recommend for you people who want to. This is like having a modern version of Morals and Dogma, and it's easier to read than Morals and Dogma, and easier to understand, but it covers the same ground and in depth. And so next week, tune in for that. And like Valley Hall used to say, that's all for tonight, folks, and good magic.